740-383-9944. It's time for Swap Shop. Come on, friends. If you're going to sell it, we're going to tell it. So pick up your phone and let me make it perfectly clear. It's time for Swap Shop. Good old Swap Shop. We're gonna try and sell it here. 740-383-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Swap Shop. This is Glenn Coble, and I've got to apologize. I didn't realize that my post-mortem with Mr. Gary Tuttle was on the air. You couldn't hear him, but I could. And so please excuse that I left my mic on. All right. Gary was a great sport to give us a call. It was 8:15 out in California when he called, so it's a little early. Gary, that was a great interview. If you're still listening, thank you very much. And as our listeners probably heard, as I was talking to you on the phone and didn't realize my mic was on, we're going to try and get back together around the Boston Marathon time. So we will talk about marathons. But right now, this is Swap Shop. As you know, during COVID, we have not done a lot of swapping, but we're more than happy to take your calls. If you want to sell something, we'd love to have it. Give us a call at 740-383-9944. We can take anything that doesn't require like a legal registration. We don't take guns or houses or cars or that sort of thing. So you can call us, tell us what you want to sell, give us your phone number, and we'll see if we can't line you up with somebody that is interested in that product. Well, I'm going to continue on. As I said earlier, we're going to continue on with some trivia, but we're going to talk about the marathons and track and cross country trivia in this last 45 minutes of the day. Oh, I looked it up. Oops, I just lost it. Where'd it go? Where'd it go? I had here it is. The explanation. A marathon is 26.219 miles. That is a complete marathon. And so if you're going to run it, you better be in fairly decent aerobic shape, right? But now the mythical explanation of why they run 26.2 miles is that around 490 BCE, they say, the courier from Philippides ran from Marathon to Athens to deliver the news that the Greeks had trounced the Persians in the battle at Marathon. Made that run, and so therefore that's become known as the distance of the marathon. Now notice that it says it's the mythical explanation, so I don't think we have anybody that was really there at the time, but that's what we've found out. 26.219 miles is a marathon, and it's been the downfall of many a runner. It was kind of interesting to listen to that explanation of VO2 max, and the amount of oxygen your body uses. My body probably uses, I probably have a 0.02 instead of 84. I think Gary's was 84 point something. Enough of that. Never have been a marathoner. The longest distance, like I said, I ever ran was a mile, and that was only because I had to do it for basic training. Most of my high school and college running was 100 and 200. Actually, back then it was called 100 100 yards and 220 yard races. Now it's meters, so it's a little bit different now. But no, not too many people run a 10-300 meter. But I ran a 10-300 yard. Okay. I was pretty fast. I was probably the second fastest kid in my high school. In 1970, 127 runners ran the New York Marathon. That was 1970s. And 127 ran the New York Marathon. Now, I watch that every year just about. But by 1998, 32,000 ran the New York Marathon. So it has really expanded. And, you know, there have been a lot of people that have made running and jogging a bit important for American American people that want to have better health. All I can say is train for it. Don't just go out and run 26 miles to 26.219 miles. Don't do that. You will kill yourself. You have to train for it. My eldest son has run. Matter of fact, Gary was talking about the Columbus Marathon. My eldest son has run the Columbus Half Marathon, which is in conjunction with the marathon, probably three or four times. And he always enjoys it. He absolutely hates it, but he enjoys it when it's done. I enjoy watching runners run because I know they're in pain, and I'm not. marathon was originally conceived as a race in the 1896 Olympics in Athens, which we talked about how it began back in 490 B.C., so apparently the guy that ran that marathon to tell the news that the of the victory of let's see what did I say the victory was the Athens victory the marathon victory over Athens the gentleman that ran that his name apparently was Nicky. He I'm not sure if that's his name, but anyway, he collapsed and died at the end of the 26.219 miles after telling the good news. So don't go out and try and run that without lots of training, right? The unusual distance is a result of the 1908 Olympic Games in London, where the marathon distance was changed to 26 miles to cover the ground from Windsor Castle to White City Stadium, with 385 yards added on so the race could finish in front of the royal family's viewing box. So now they run 26 miles, 385 yards, as opposed to the 26.219 miles, okay? Now you know everything you should know about the marathon, except, well, you also know you shouldn't do it without much training. I'm not sure I could walk that far. Matter of fact, I am pretty sure I could not walk that far. And I walk about 2 miles a day. But, you know, that sounds really stupid after listening to Gary say that he had logged 180,000 miles in running since he started running. Oh, my. Anyway, I feel so inadequate. Okay, here's a good question. How many hurdles? Have you ever gone to a track meet and watched them? They're great fun. And if you have a friend that's a track coach, or for that matter, if you just know a track coach, offer your services to those guys. They're always looking for volunteers, for finish line people, or for people to keep times, or for people to hand out the finish little tickets to tell you when you finished, that sort of thing. They're always looking for volunteers. So call them up and say, hey, I'd like to volunteer to be a helper at your next track meet. It truly is great fun. My wife and I both did it when we were younger. I'm not sure I would do it during COVID, but after we get through this and everybody gets, my wife got her first shot today. As a matter of fact, while I was on the air with Gary, she got her first shot. I've had my first shot. I'm now 9 days into that first shot. No ill effects at all. And I'm hoping my wife will be able to report the same thing after she's done with hers. But she should be heading home by now, starting to encourage her body to rebel against any COVID germs that want to come her way. Anyway, how many hurdles are in a standard hurdle race? Do you know how many hurdles there are? You know, it's kind of crazy. I remember watching kids run. Well, I was in charge of game management at OU for all of our track meets, and so I had to make sure the hurdles got set up, and they always get knocked down. Somebody always knocks down one or two or three. Hopefully they don't knock themselves down. But there are 10 of those hurdles that they have to jump over in a standard hurdle race. And it's quite fun to watch them. Now, the trick in running the hurdles is that you try to skim over the top of the hurdle, leaving only the width of the hair on the back of your leg to touch that hurdle. You don't want to touch the hurdle because it'll throw your steps off. But you don't want to miss it by, you know, 20 feet or by a foot and a half over it. Now, when you watch them run the hurdles, you know, in grade school, those kids will run up to the hurdle and high jump over the hurdle and keep going. But by the time you get to high school, you better be cutting it a little closer. And if you run hurdles in college and beyond, you're one of those people that will be skimming it. You can feel the hairs on the back of your thigh as they touch the top of that hurdle. It's a scary thing. It's almost as scary as the steeplechase. Now, Gary Tuttle, the gentleman I interviewed, was a world-class steeplechaser. He had the world record, I think, 2 years in a row for steeplechase. And that's a scary thing. I love watching the steeplechase because they have to jump over that pond. And what they do is they jump up on a hurdle and then jump to the end of the pond, hopefully missing most of it, and keep on going. But there are a lot of people that get wet in that pond. It makes you want to laugh, but you know they're killing themselves to do that. So you don't laugh. You try to hold it back, okay? How high are the hurdles in the men's 210-meter hurdle race? No, they're not 20 feet high. And no, they're not a foot high. They're somewhere in between, right? 42 inches. You try to jump over 42 inches, just, you know, especially if you're my age. Well, I can't. But if you're in your 30s, well, if you're in your 40s, try to jump 42 inches high. No, don't do it because you'll fall down and then you'll blame me for doing it, right? Don't do it. 42 inches is almost 4 feet. It's 3 feet, three, a little over 3 feet and a half, right? Yeah. And it's fairly high, so you don't want to be doing that. That's how high the men's 110-meter hurdle is set. And it's kind of interesting because when I was in charge of game management for our track meets, I had to make sure you had the right height set for that, whichever race you were running. The women's was a different height, and there are highs and low hurdles, so you have to make sure you have the right height. You don't want to have somebody being disadvantaged because his hurdle is 4 inches higher than the other person's. So 42 inches is what you set the men's 110 at. How long? Now, I ran the indoor. I ran at Navy Pier, the only indoor race I ever ran. And I ran the 200, and I ran the 60. And the 60, kind of interesting because you could get up some pretty good speed by the time you hit the six, you know, by the time you got 60 yards out, 60 meters out. And it's on a straightaway. But at the Navy Pier, and I assume at most of the indoor track meets, you run out of space. So they set up a rope at the end of it, or a net, that'll catch the runners so that they don't slam into a cement wall. And that's kind of fun. The one I ran in, they had a really heavy-duty rope being held by two people on both sides. And no, actually, I think it was more than two people on both sides. But anyway, all of us ran into that rope, and they kind of caught us and kind of eased you back. But I ran it in 6.7 seconds or 6.6 seconds, which was okay. It wasn't great. Like I said earlier, it was within 6/10 of a second of the world record. Of course, you're only running 60 yards. So that's, you know, 6/10 of a second is a lot of time in that distance. Anyway, how long do you think the longest, or how long do you think most indoor laps are? If you go to a place like the Navy Pier, or you go to any place that has an indoor track, how long is the indoor track as a standard length? It's not the 100 meters, or the 400 meters. I will tell you, it's not as long as the outdoor ones. It's half as long. It's 60 meters. Or 60. It's 200 meters. The turns are really hard to run. So your 200 speeds will not be nearly, won't be comparable to your 400 speeds. It's kind of interesting, though, because it seems like you're always turning. And you are turning a lot of the time on a 200-meter track. I did like the track at Navy Pier back in the early, in the dark ages when I ran. It was a regular track, but it was laid over railroad ties to give you a little bit of a bounce. And that's kind of an interesting way to run. You don't bounce a lot, but it makes it softer than if you were running on green felt over cement. And you also, another thing you have to do when you're running indoors, or you're running on an artificial track, you have to know what length of spike you're going to wear in your shoe. A lot of people don't know that you wear different spikes. Now, if you're running in on a soft track, you know, let's go back to the good old days. If you're running on a cinder track, you're going to wear a spike that's probably 3/8 of an inch longer. Can be very dangerous because if you fall down, those spikes are sticking up. And I did fall on a cinder track when I was very young, and I was picking cinders out of my legs for quite a while. It was very painful. You don't want to do that. But anyway, most of the indoor tracks, or most of the artificial tracks, your spike is probably not longer than 1/8 of an inch. So they're pretty small, but they give you grip. And you need that because you can't run in tennis shoes and get the speed and the grip that you need, right? All right. What is the shortest race outdoor standard track, which is sometimes not entirely run in lanes? The shortest that is sometimes not entirely run in lanes. I thought it was the 400. I was absolutely wrong. It's the 800. Some of the 800 races are not run entirely in their lanes. Matter of fact, most of them aren't anymore. Flip over after you go around the first fourth turn. Yeah, but it's kind of interesting too. When you switch over, and it's really interesting if you're on a relay and you have to switch lanes, because you'll be coming down the last stretch before you hand the baton off to somebody else, and the official will have to tell you who gets the inside lap and who's second and who's third and so forth. And they do it basically, the guy or the woman who's in first place gets the inside lane. They hand off to the inside lane. But in the last 20 or 30 yards, that can change. And sometimes they have to move the people quickly. And it can get kind of hairy in there. Moving somebody, okay, you're now in second place, so I have to move you from lane one to lane two. And they really have to do it in a hurry. So anyway, kind of fun, though. It adds interest to the race, right? And there have been a few tumbles taken because of the changeover. Who set, now this is an Ohio question, okay? Who set three world track records and tied a fourth one in one day? Now, you got to know, this guy was he's a Buckeye. Jesse Owens. He set three world track records and tied a fourth one all in one day. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, those weren't distance races. Those were short races. But still, pumping out that much intensity to run four races in one day, even if they're all, 60, the 100, the 200, and the 400, you're going to be pretty well shot by the end of it. And it kind of depends on how much time you have in between those races. Kind of like swimming. My daughter used to do a lot of swimming, and it kind of depended. She swam the mile at the end of most races, but if she had to swim a shorter race, the IM or something like that in between, it kind of depended on how much time she had to recover from her last race to the mile. And you had to kind of plan that. So you had to know the order that they were going to swim it in. And that is one crazy sport, though. You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning so you can – well, we used to live in Athens, so we got up at 5 o'clock in the morning because we had to drive up to Columbus. We had to be at the swimming pool at 7 and be ready to do your practice laps, which they all do. You go in. She does her practice laps. You start smelling like chlorine. Your eyes start smarting. And she doesn't swim for another 2 hours. Crazy, crazy business. But we all love taking our kids to all these different sports. Now that daughter of mine, by the way, not only does she coach all four of her kids in four different sports, she also is in charge of city facility that has swimming in it. So, boy, I don't know how she does it. I'm real proud of her, but I wouldn't do it. Who shattered the outdoor records in both the 100-meter dash and long jump, but they couldn't be counted because of a wind assist? And I'll tell you what wind assist is later, but who shattered? It was a male. He shattered the 100-meter dash and long jump, but they couldn't count it because they had a wind assist. Carl Lewis, you remember him? Really handsome young man that he was well-spoken. He was an announcer for a while. I don't know what he's doing. I'll have to look that up. I hope he's still with us. Carl Lewis did that. He shattered both the outdoor records in 100-meter dash and the long jump, but they couldn't count it because the wind was blowing too fast. Okay, now comes the question. How fast is an allowable wind speed for a new running record to be counted? What do you think? And they measure it in meters per second. Not miles per hour. It's meters per second. So you'll have to get your calculator out to figure this one out if you want to figure out what it is, miles per hour. But the answer to that question is the maximum allowable wind speed for a new running record to count is plus 2.0 meters per second. I have no idea what that translates into miles per hour. Do you? I don't think I'm going to get my phone out, to my calculator out to figure it out. While we're talking about fast men, how do they determine? Well, who do they say is the world's fastest man? How do they determine who gets that title, world's fastest man? It's kind of interesting because I guess they use this. There is a world championship, but there's the Olympic champion. And those are the two choices you might have. But the answer is the person that runs the fastest 100-meter Olympic speed is the world's fastest man. Is it Bolt right now? I believe it is. But it's whoever is the world's 100-meter Olympic champion, whoever sets that record, is the world's fastest man. I do love watching track, and I really hope that you can get out and see a track meet this year. And if you can and you can help your track coach out, please give him a call and say, hey, I'm going to go anyway. You want me to stand at the finish line and check off when the runners come across? That would be nice. Okay. Now, I didn't know that they had this particular designation, but they actually have what they consider to be a false start amount of time. Is 2 seconds too fast? Is a minute and a half too fast? I have never been charged with a false start. I was pretty good out of the blocks, but I was always a little bit reticent to go fast. I mean, to go early. So I never broke a false start. Maybe I would have been a little faster if I had anticipated a little bit better, because you're allowed up to 1/10 of a second movement before it's considered a false start. Now, I don't know how they would judge that. I always thought it was just the starter watches everybody, and if there's any little flinching, they call it a false start. But apparently, there's an actual time limit. If you move earlier than 1/10 of a second before the gun goes off, you can be charged with a false start. Okay, now, this is kind of interesting. Because, you know, the... there are different calls. Like when I was running the 100, they would say, runners to your mark, take your, what was it? Runners to your mark, anyway, there were three calls. And the last one was not a call, but the bang of the gun. What do they do for the long distance race? Do they give you ready, set, go, or do they give you good luck? Or what do you think they do to officially start a long distance race? What are the commands, I guess they call it? For a long distance race, it is different than a sprint. A sprint, there are three things that they say. Well, two things and the start of the gun. For a long distance race, it's on your mark, bang. That's all there is. You better be ready to go when they say on your mark, because you're going to get the gun fairly soon. Now, occasionally, some of these starters will hold. And I've seen some false starts by several people because the starter... You kind of get used to all day watching him. You kind of get used to what his or her routine is going to be. But I have seen an occasional starter wait too long, and you know you're kind of leaning anyway, and you two or three of them lose their balance and start early. Now, some places you are not given a second chance. you're out. And some places they do give you a second chance, but only a second chance. Anyway, the command is on your mark, bang. That's the command for a long distance race. Don't give you a whole lot of breathing time in between. Yeah. How long is the exchange zone in a relay? You know, if you run in a relay, it's kind of fun. I loved running relays. I was usually, if I wasn't the anchor, I was the leadoff because I was one of the quicker kids on both my high school and college teams. Now, my college team, I only ran as a freshman, so we didn't run a lot. But anyway, the distance that they give you to change the baton. Now, the baton is, I guess it's about a 9-inch long, usually now aluminum tubular thing, quite often very colorful, easy to grab a hold of because it's made out of aluminum, smooth, but also easier to drop than the old-fashioned bamboo pole things, which, by the way, is what they used to make pole vaulting poles out of. I'll tell you a few stories about that too here in a minute. The amount of time that you have, the runner that's bringing you the baton, he goes into the zone, and it's marked on the ground where the zone starts, and usually the runner who you're going to hand it off to is pretty close to the starting area, that starting point, and he takes off running. He times it so that he's up to full speed by the time the baton reaches his hand. That's in theory. And then he takes off, and hopefully he's got it completely in his hand by the time he reached the end of that zone. How long is that zone, do you suppose? It's 20 meters long. And there have been many a race lost because somebody overstepped it and didn't have the baton yet. Or there are a lot of races lost because they dropped the baton. Now, you can pick it back up, but if you have to reach over and pick up a baton that you've dropped, you've pretty much lost the race because most of these races are the difference between first and second and third and fourth places is just, you know, less than seconds. So especially in some of the 4x2 race or the 4x1, the 4x1 there's no time at all. So anyway, that's just once around the track, and so there's no time at all. You better hang on. An official indoor track, I think we already mentioned this, is 200 meters long. And they're all different depending on, now I'm sure they're being more standardized now that we've been in the business a while, but and we have a lot of indoor track facilities anymore. They're becoming better and better. I don't think there are any track facilities that have bare railroad ties as what you run on. But like I said, that one at Navy Pier was railroad ties, but they were covered by an all-weather surface that you ran on. But you could hear the ties making noise as they clanked together as you were running. But that's a long, long time ago. Let's see, how many years ago was that I would have run that? Pretty close to 60 years ago. All right. Now, there's an abbreviation for a organization that is really quite often makes up the rules for track and cross country, and it's called the IAFF. What do you think IAFF stands for? Well, I'll give you a second to think about that. IAFF. And by the way, you are listening to WWGH 107.1 here in Marion, Ohio. We would like to thank Gary Tuttle for doing an interview with us. Gary Tuttle, great distance runner, politician, bon vivant, all the fancy things you can call him. And apparently he's a friend of mine. Anyway, the IAAF stands for International Association of Athletic Federations. Long name to basically say we're the boss of track or whatever they're the boss of, right? All right. Now, there I think we were talking about doping and stuff like that, Gary and I, there for a brief period of time. He's concerned about doping kind of getting a little bit more prolific in the sports, and that should make us all uncomfortable. It is kind of strange, though. They have all these rules against doping. And yet there's a woman who has a very high level of testosterone, which means she is, very strong, very solid built, and very quick and very strong, as I said before. And now they're telling her that she has to take a drug to reduce her testosterone level, which is natural in her body. That just doesn't seem right. But anyway, there was a big blood doping thing that was going on. It was going on in Sydney, when the 2000 Sydney Olympics were there. What do you think? Do you remember the name of the substance? It's an acronym. It's not the full name. The name probably is unpronounceable. But the blood doping substance was called EPO. I vaguely remember them talking about EPO. That kind of led the way to people looking more and more into doping of athletes. And there was a big amount of interest in our baseball players who were I can't remember the name of that drug, but it wasn't EPO. You were constantly wondering if somebody was going to require an asterisk be put by their name because were found out that they were doped up when they hit 60 home runs or whatever they were doing. But EPO was the one that was more famous for the blood doping substance. Now, I always thought that blood doping was where you saved your own blood and then transfused it back into yourself. Apparently, I'm wrong on that, or maybe that's part of how you got the EPO involved in it, but that was the big thing in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. EPO was the substance that they were using. Which events involve throwing a spherical weight from the shoulder? I think they were trying to throw us off on this question by using fancy term for a ball. Spherical weight. Which event? Oh, it's obvious. The shot put. Now, I do have an interesting story about the hammer throw, which is quite often thrown in the same area with the shot put. We had a young man when I was at OU that was practicing throwing the hammer, and it's a dangerous sport. For some reason or other, it slipped in his hand, went up in the air, and came down and hit him in the head. His buddy that was with him saw it, ran out. He was completely unconscious, went out to see what he could do to help. Well, the young man's head had been dented in where it hit him. And Oblenis Hospital was less than 400 yards from where our throwing area was. And a couple of guys got together and they took him right over to the hospital. And that young man was repaired and was on the track team the following year. Now, he didn't do any more hammer throws, and he did. Matter of fact, I think that ended our hammer throwing traditions at OU. I believe that did. He was also a football player, and I believe that I think he might have played football the following fall. From what I understand, his head was actually dented in the shape of that hammer that came down on his head. And they had to repair all that, obviously, and he was okay. He was a very lucky young man. We also had an interesting situation at a Mid-American Conference Championship where one of the officials standing out in the field while they were throwing the javelin actually took one in the chest. Well, it was really high up on, more towards his shoulder, and went down. But they pulled it out, and he was okay. They obviously took him to the hospital. But yikes, that's pretty scary, getting javelin thrown at you and into you. He lived and did fine after that, but it just scared the daylights out of people. And from what I remember hearing tales about it, I wasn't there, but hearing tales about it, apparently the person that threw the javelin passed out because of, you know, the trauma of doing that. So anyway, be careful. If you're going to go to a track meet, know where you're standing. I remember one track meet that I was involved in. I was a runner, and I went over on the infield. They had a temporary fence all the way around the infield so that people wouldn't walk on the fancy football turf. And I went over, and they had the fence was held up by those green metal stakes that you pound into the ground. Well, somebody had pounded into the ground where there was an electrical wire, and I leaned up against it. I got the biggest shock you can imagine. Fortunately, it didn't do anything bad to me except for it hurt, and it surprised the heck out of me. I think it might have knocked me to my knees, but I ran over and told an official, and sure enough, they had driven it through an electrical wire, which was giving us all a jolt if we touched it. I think I was the only person that actually touched that. We probably weren't supposed to be on the inside of the track. I remember when I ran. I was a long jumper as well as we called it long jump back then. Or we called it broad jump back then, but they call it long jump now. I was jumping on a field, and I was really having a great day. I think my longest jump was 21 feet 3 inches. That was in my heyday, and that was when the longest I had ever jumped. But that day, I was just having a great day, and I was going to jump one of the times. I'm not sure whether it was when I jumped my longest. Well, it probably wasn't because we had to stop. Somebody ran across the lead up to the long jump pit while I was on the track running to jump, and I had to slam on the brakes. That happened occasionally. That was, I believe, in my senior year in high school. So I was able to stop and not run into the person, and able to, they didn't charge me with a jump, which was very kind of them. Anyway, that was where I would go if my coach told me I had to run the 400. I would go to the long jump pit. Usually it was a ways away from the track, and quite often there was nobody there because they had already finished it or they hadn't started it yet. There were a few times where I made a contribution to the long jump pit. I would get real nauseated if I had to run the longer distances. Anyway, like I said, and I'm sure you heard me when I inadvertently left my microphone on while I was taking my post-mortem call from Gary Tuttle, and I told him we're going to get him back on when the Boston comes around in the fall. So he can give us some hints at what to watch, who's going to be good, what women are going to be good. His wife is very good distance runner, and I'm sure she knows all of that stuff. And we're going to just try and pick his brains of marathon running and distance running again. We had a great day this morning, and he did a great job, and I really appreciate it. Do you know who won the very first Boston Marathon? Kind of interesting. I don't think very many people know the answer to this, except for Boston Marathon aficionados. The very first Boston Marathon was run in 1897, and John McDermott won. He was from the United States, and he won the Boston Marathon in 2 minutes. 2 minutes, yes. 2 hours, 55.10 seconds. 2 hours, 55 minutes and 10 seconds is what he ran it in. Now they're running it much faster than that. But it still would be wonderful. Like Gary was saying, he had a friend that he helped break that 3 hour thing by running with him and pacing him. John McDermott broke the 3 hour barrier in the very first Boston Marathon with a time of 2 hours, 55 minutes, and 10 seconds back in 1897. Not that far past the Civil War, about 40 years. The other Boston Marathoners that I thought I'd pull up their time, and Jeff Smith is the gentleman that Gary was running against when he ended up getting second in the marathon. Now, Gary said he got second, and he got seventh with his second fastest. Jeff Smith ran it in 1984. He won it in 84 and 85 with times of 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 34 seconds, and 2 hours, 14 minutes, and 5 seconds. He was from England, or as they say here, United Kingdom. But Jeff Smith was the guy that he was running against. Interesting, in the Los Angeles Times, they tell the story where Gary was running and had heard through the crowd that Jeff had pulled a muscle and was slowing down, and he thought, well, I might be able to win the Boston Marathon. And sure enough, he started pulling up because he was running too fast, and apparently Jeff Smith recovered and ended up winning, and Gary came in second that year. And recently, the most recent marathon was Lawrence Chirono back in 2019, and he was from Kenya. He won it in 2 hours, 7 minutes, and 57 seconds. And this last year, it was canceled. The Boston was canceled because of COVID. All right. Well, we're about ready to get out of here. We've got about 30 seconds, and I got a call, so I guess I'm going to see if I can't answer it. What do you say? It'll be awful fast. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you? Hello?
He's calling back.
All right. Well, I missed the call, and so I'm going to have to talk to him after the show is over. Thanks for listening today, and I hope you'll tune in next week on Wednesday and Thursday for all three of my shows. Okay? Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWE.